Okay. So to start, please tell me your name and your office that you're running for.
Okay, my name is Sarah Mae Williams. I'm from the Thonautham Nation. I am currently a candidate for Legislative District 4 for state representative.
Okay. And if you could please tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, any positions you've held recently.
Okay. So to begin with, I've been a school board member for the Babakiver Unified School District for the going on my eighth school year now. And I've been involved in the local tribal politics for, my gosh, probably the last 12 years, and sat on my legislative council as an alternate for 4 years. So I have a little bit of tribal politics under my belt, as well as being a school board member. So education, I'm an advocate for education, and find myself often lobbying in D.C. for Impact Day dollars. I also see myself at the state legislature also advocating for Indian education as well as public education. So, yeah.
Could you please tell us what brings you out to Yuma today?
So today I was invited to at the candidate forum under, I believe it's the Yuma Chamber of Commerce. And so it was a good opportunity to really get a feel of some portion of Yuma as well as the other candidates. So,
okay. And you are a Green Party candidate. So mm-hmm. if you could please tell our listeners how you would explain the Green Party values that you believe in.
So it's interesting, and I'll be very honest with everyone. I'm new to the Green Party. I was a hardcore Bernie Sanders fan, and when I saw the fallout that had happened in the Democrat Party, I knew that I was either going to become an independent again, or I was going to start looking at other parties. And for me, when I started to look at platforms, I looked at the Green Party and said, you know, this is the kind of ideology that I could stand behind, because it really falls in line with indigenous communities and our thoughts. And so I ended up becoming a Green Party person, and all of a sudden found myself running for this position. So I should be very honest with you. What sparked my interest in running is the students at my school. They had held an anti-gun violence teach-in following what had happened in Florida. And they had invited Pamela Simon, who was Gabrielle Giffords' congressional staffer. And she made a comment to everyone. Well, really, she asked a question of everyone, and she said, how many of you know who your LD4 leadership is? And not one hand had gone up. And that, to me, said something to my own community, because we've never been represented in the LD4 district for many years. Most of the leadership has come from Yuma or beyond Yuma. And so I finally had said, you know what, I need to be able to show the students in my own community that we need to be represented, especially with the issues that are happening in our community. So, which brings me to the Green Party. For myself, because I come from a tribal community, we are challenged on many levels, specifically with the border wall situation that's happening. When we start to talk about economic development and alternative energies and things that are going to be beneficial to a community that has high poverty. When I start to think about those things, I look at the Green Party and say they stand for all those things that I believe in. And so that's what brought me to the party. I look at Yuma and I look around and go, so you have three major industries, military, agriculture, and tourism. How sustainable are those industries here? And so I bring, and I hope I bring, the message that's saying, yes, you can have those industries, but how are they sustainable? How do you keep them going well into the future when you know that water is in crisis right now? When you know that agriculture as well has just, we all have to start looking at the industries that are here to say, maybe it's time to start taking a look at it and being more sustainable. And what does that look like? So I hope that I can bring that message through the Green Party to Yuma and to LD4 District.
Education is an issue that is always important, but especially on people's minds. Last couple of days, schools have been opening back for business in Yuma area. Just what are your thoughts on education funding, the whole Red for Ed movement that the state has been seeing for the past few months?
So I'm really glad you asked this question, because what brought me to becoming a school board member for my tribal nation's public school system was the fact that we had found out that we were a persistently lowest achieving school district, which put us in the bottom 5% of all schools in the state of Arizona. So we found ourselves in a situation where we were about to have our doors shuttered by the state. And it was almost like everyone was pointing a finger at us like it was our fault. And partially some of it was because we didn't take a stand to say, wait a minute, how can we let this continue to go on? Our children are suffering with horrible and horrendous education. So what we ended up doing is we got rid of our superintendent. We kind of set the reset button with him. And in fact, he's a Yuma native, Dr. Sakaris. He's from and grew up here. But he came in. He assessed the situation in our school district. He was able to show that we needed to get rid of all of our admin, which was our principals, and then also get rid of 50% of our teachers, because he had shown that they hadn't moved our children 1 to 2 grade levels in a year. And so by setting that reset button, his first idea was we need to pay our teachers what they're worth. So we are now the highest paying school district for incoming teachers at $51,000. And I can tell you that by making that move, that actually enticed all these individuals, these great teachers, to come into our school district. And we're seeing the results of it now. So when I started, we had probably about low 40% graduation rate. We are now at 81%. And a lot of that, I attribute that to having quality teachers in the classroom. We were able to offer all kinds of benefits for them to be there. And the way we did that is we had to leverage all of our dollars, federal and state, and every kind of dollar you could imagine, to put it into great teachers. So beyond that, having great teachers, we ended up also implementing a pre-K program. And so what we were seeing, when you had that certified teacher in the classroom, you were seeing our kids go into kindergarten, not kindergarten ready, but almost first grade ready. And so now you're seeing that play out through the rest of the grade levels in our school district, that kids are learning at a higher level. And we hope that in turn, that you're going to see great things happening with all of our graduates. So I will say, one of the other statistics is that when I started as a school board member, we'd have maybe less than 5 students get into college, with maybe 1 or 2 of them continuing on. What we're seeing now is we're seeing out of a cohort of about 55 students, we're seeing 83% of those kids go off to college and 99% of them staying in college, which is new for tribal communities and for my own community. So, you know, we're seeing the results that when you put that investment in, you're seeing the big results happen, because you have everyone on one wavelength thinking student achievement, and so you're seeing these great things happening. So when I think about Red for Ed, I look at it and say, we already implemented that and it works. That's why I support Invest in Ed. That's why I support more funding in the classrooms, because we are kind of that model that says that if you make that investment, you're going to see major results in the future. And that's where we're at.
Water is another issue that is important to this community, of course. What are your thoughts on water conservation, water rights?
So that's a very good question. And, you know, this is one of the questions that came up today, because everyone's talking about protecting water. And one of the things that I had to remind everyone is that you can protect all the water in the world, but the problem that we're seeing is the chemicals that are in that water, and how safe is that water? You think about the industry that's here in Yuma, and I know a lot of people don't want to have this conversation, but you have big ag here. So what kind of chemicals have been going into that water? And you think about now taking it to the federal level of this current president doing away with a lot of those protections through the EPA and allowing dumping to go on into your waterways. The question now begins to not just protect it, but to also make sure that what you're giving and putting out to the people is chemical free and is safe for everybody. So there's a bigger question that needs to happen, that yes, drought is a factor. Again, when you're talking about big agriculture, military, and tourism, it's talking about conservation, because you want those industries to sustain themselves. And if that's not possible, or if it's not possible for them to have more sustainable practices that will allow them to conserve that water, then maybe it's time to start also looking about industries that are going to be beneficial for the community. You know, and that's where, standing here in an education facility, you can start to have that conversation about where do we go in the future? how do we sustain Yuma into, you know, the next 100 years? So, yeah, I have a very strong opinion when it comes to water and protecting it, but also looking at the deeper question of how safe it is.
An important part of the community, and you've touched on this to some degree, but in the Yuma area specifically, is the Native community, mm-hmm. And it is undercovered, unfortunately, mm-hmm. In terms of media and the stories that are important to that community, mm-hmm. With the Kokopa and the Quechua. Just, you know, what issues do you feel are important to the community that the, you know, general population should know about and should work on?
So again, I think it comes down to like visibility. It's like, we're still here, you know, as Native communities, we're still here and we're still very challenged. We are challenged because we have the uniqueness of being a tribal community that's sovereign. And sometimes I think the state doesn't quite understand what that means. But at the same time, again, with this current administration on the federal government, you're seeing a lot of those protections being taken away. And so how does the state come to our aid in that? And unfortunately, when I was at the forum today, you know, everyone's saying, oh, federal government needs to stay out of our business. But in some cases where it comes to us, who is reliant on some of that federal aid, those 638 funds, it's about how do you protect that and how do you utilize that to the best of our abilities? And how do we partner together? So have we ever had that conversation that, yes, we have some water protection as well, but how do we grow together and rise as one community? And that's going to be the conversation that I hope we have in the future, is that how do we work together? Because the only way we're going to be able to do this is that we're having that same discussion across the entire state. It's not just a Yuma situation of water drought. It's across the state. So how do we help each other? And tribes factor into this because we have, we do have water rights. And so how do we come up together? And I think that's going to be an amazing conversation to have in the future. So yes, we're still here. We're still very valid. Our issues are still very complex, but I think having that communication with everyone is going to be beneficial.
Last question is, what other issues besides education, besides water, would you like to address for your campaign that the voters, you know where you stand?
So let me think about that. You know, again, when I think about Yuma and when I think about where I'm from, we have very high unemployment rates from my understanding. And the question is, when you see such a divide as far as income inequality is concerned, and the truth is, where do we go from here? Because that's such a big factor. Nobody wants to tax, but at the same time though, there's such a divide. The only way we're gonna pull ourselves out of the situations that we're in is to really start talking about how are we gonna gain more funding here. I noticed today, I did say that we do need to tax in the future, but the reason why I'm saying that is because you think about that divide that exists out there. You're either going to offer high quality education or job readiness, or you're going to pay for it in the end when we have individuals who've never had that or could never attain a quality education. You're going to pay for it in the end when they're dependent on the state. And so somewhere in here, we need to have a very real conversation about how we rise up together because of that divide that exists out there. And so I'm very passionate about that. When I think about right now, there's a conversation being had on the federal government that if you are receiving some kind of assistance or you're getting Medicare or Medicaid, that they want you to work for those benefits. Well, what happens when your unemployment rate is so high? You know, those things are the things that keep me up at night, because I know in my own tribal community, we have unemployment rates that, you know, make Yumas look like nothing. And so all of us are going to have to think about, yes, you don't want to pay for those individuals, but somehow you're going to end up paying for them anyway. So why not pay for those quality services up front rather than in the end? So that's something that I think that nobody is talking about, but we need to have that conversation. And it does begin with education. So we are having the good conversation when we think about Invest in Ed, but why are we having that conversation? It's because we see the inequality all across the state and all across this country now. So that's my stance on that, and something that I'm very passionate about is, you know, how do we help everybody?
speaking on that, another issue that I thought of is because we are a border district, and you know, as you get down to San Luis, Arizona, right there on the border, and you said you're familiar with that too. What are your thoughts on immigration reform? You know, it's a contentious issue right now. You hear, you know, from both sides. What are your thoughts on immigration?
So I'm very also passionate about this because the Tonawanda Nation shares 72 miles of international border. And, you know, the sad thing is that today there was an individual that was, you know, so anti-border, you know, or he was pro-border, border wall, we'll say. And the words he was using, everything that he was saying was so offensive. And I'm sitting there and I had to say something because I'm going, it's fear-mongering. You know, I live about 8 miles away from that border, and I hate to say this, but I have more issues with Border Patrol than I do with those who are crossing. You know, we've had more injustice happen to us as a people from Border Patrol, and no matter how many times we try to point that out to everyone, you know, the issue is that, yeah, but we're protecting our borders. Well, that doesn't mean you get to treat my people with injustice. So the question now becomes, is ICE, abolish ICE and all these other things that are happening right now, do I stand behind that? I do. Because again, there's a false narrative that's happening out there that if you're living along the border, it's you often wonder, okay, wait, where is all the violence happening? Because it's not happening as they're saying it. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but if I'm living in my community all year long and I haven't had one incident happen to me from someone crossing over, but I've had five happen to me from Border Patrol, that's the conversation that we need to be having. And so that's where I know in my own community, we often have to say we are tired of living in a militarized zone because, one, if you think about the statistics of drugs or illegal immigrants or whatever who are coming over, that has tremendously dropped. But nobody wants to talk about that. They want to, you know, scare everybody into thinking that we need 24/7 someone on that border. Well, you have Border Patrol, and sometimes there's no oversight over them. So it's time for us as communities along the border to sit down and have a very real conversation about their expectation and our expectation, and then come together so that we're not feeling like we're being trampled on or our rights are being trampled on. So,
is there anything else you would like to say in closing?
I just want to say that it was a really great opportunity to come to Yuma. I'll be excited that once the primary is over, I'll be here pretty heavily coming out and talking to the communities and letting them know my stances on other things that are probably more important to them. I just want to know the community more, and I want to know and share with them that there are a lot of commonalities that we have and that we can work together. So, yeah, thank you again for inviting me here, and I'm excited to get to know Yuma more.
Sarah Mae Williams, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Very good.